Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 155 of Getting It Out podcast. That was War Criminal with Unforgiving featuring Josh Compton of Forced Under. That's a track off of their EP God Failed Me, which came out back in December. And it's a pretty cool, heavy hardcore from New England. So you know how that goes. And if you don't, go back, listen again. That's how it goes. All right. And Josh Compton, I don't know that name, but I do know the name Forced Under. I believe my buddy Joey Slayer plays in that band, who, you know, a little trivia for you, did the original logo for Getting It Out podcast. Not the original logo, that was me in MS Paint. He did the one after that, the one that had my face on it. So Joey from Forced Under, who has a member that featured on this track from War Criminal. You see how it all works? It all comes together on Getting It Out podcast. But yeah, check out War Criminal. Check out God Failed Me. And you know, do the thing that you do to War Criminal when you can, which you can't right now. You can't go to hardcore shows right now, so you can't do what you would do to War Criminal. You just have to do it at your home, in your bedroom, in your mirror, like we used to, all right? This well, I used to drink from the hose. That's we used to mosh in the mirror, all right? Do that shit, all right? Until then, deal with it. Okay, so what's really happening on this episode is an interview with Dylan from Yashira. They're a Jacksonville band that just put out this cool metal record called Fail to Be on Good Fight Music, and we're going to talk all about it, and you're damn right we're going to mention Limp Bizkit. Let's do it.
Kick it! Make family out of friends! Make friends out of enemies! Peace to my family! Make friends till they bury me! All the places we've been, we're never sitting it out! We'll be getting it in! Where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been, we're never sitting it out! We'll be getting it in! Where you getting it out? Get in and out!
Okay, how you doing? 2021, off to a crazy start, just the way we left off in 2020, which is what I kept saying, is why would things change in 2021 when they were wild in 2020? Might as well keep it going. Glad to see that we did keep it going. Yesterday was fucking nutty. This week, I should say, was nutty. And let's just keep doing it, man. This shit is exciting. Good or bad, it is exciting. There's part of me that, you know, really, really wants to, like, you know, look down on people for doing the shit that they did this week at the U.S. Capitol building. Like, the bigger part of me is like, that shit is super fucking wrong. But the more devilish part of me is like, this shit is hilarious. Let's go ape shit. I mean, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to watch and enjoy it. But you guys go crazy. Tear down the government. I don't care. I'll watch from here. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. But you guys can go ahead and do that. Whichever side, I don't care. Whichever side wins, let's just duke it out. Let's just have a burn it down competition. Whoever first one to do it gets it, right? Is that the way it should go? I don't know. I don't know the rules for revolution. Are there rules? Is it revolution? I don't even know how to use a dictionary. So what the fuck can you expect from me? Okay, that's enough. Let's get down to serious business. I've been drinking these sodas. They're called Spike Sodas. I got them for $2.50. They're four packs at the local liquor store. And I got them because they were $2.50. I got each flavor, lemon lime, classic cola, root beer, and ginger ale. And I'm happy to report that they're all absolutely terrible. And now I know why they were $2.50. They're made by a decent brand, Crook and Marker, right? I mean, at least it looks like it. There's a little guy, like maybe a polo. There's a horse with a flag. That usually means something good. Or maybe it's a really small goat and a small flag on its back. But I don't know. But I think it's a horse and a flag. It's got the look of something good. It's got the taste of something awful. It basically tastes like aspartame. Do you know what that is? It's what gives you really bad cholesterol. Well, it's what gives unhealthy people really bad cholesterol. Also not exercising. But anyway, so I've been drinking this. And all it really does is kind of make my stomach sound like a didgeridoo when I lay down at night. But that's pretty much what everything does to my stomach. My stomach is just constantly having a concert full of didgeridoos. And then later it makes a bunch of didgeridoo-doos, but not when I want them to, you know, just like at inconvenient times, like the middle of my workday. And that's basically a summary of my life. And some of you don't care to hear that, but some of you can relate in a really important way. So I just wanted to say, you're not alone. I got a didgeridoo stomach too, that sometimes makes didgeridoo-doos. Okay, that's enough crap talk. But hey, speaking of crap, I used to have a shirt. It said crap. I made it when I was in high school. And I think I just ripped it off from a Big Brother magazine shirt that's also said crap. I think if you look at some of those Big Brother skate videos from back in the day, you'll see people with crap shirts. It just says crap, right? And I wore that shirt a couple times out in public. And one of the times I wore it out in public was this really cool show. I think it was the first East Coast Tsunami Fest in Malvern, Pennsylvania. And that was like Sick of It All, H2O, Earth Crisis, Mushmouth, Fury of Five. Anyway, it was a cool show. And my friend John Barlow really liked that shirt that day. And I always remember that he really liked that shirt that day. And unfortunately, he died a few years back as well. So I think 7 years ago, just this week, it was 7 years ago since my man John Patrick Barlow died. If you're not familiar with him personally, maybe you'll be familiar with his band Animal House, who put out a great fucking record called Boys from Barley Hill back in, I don't know what year it would have been, 2012 maybe, I'm going to guess, maybe 2011. Great demo in 2010-ish. Yeah, but anyway, just a little memory of John Patrick Barlow. Great guy, great friend. Unfortunately, been gone for a long time now. So anyway, just wanted to put that out there. Okay, moving on. No more crap, no more dead friends. Let's talk about a band that's really cool coming out of Jacksonville, Florida. Now, I think there's a lot of jokes that can be said about Jacksonville, Florida, but I'm not going to hear any of them. Although, I wonder how stoked Trevor Lawrence is to know that he's going to be drafted by the Jaguars. I don't know. But I wonder how stoked Gardner Minshew is to know that Trevor Lawrence is going to be drafted by the Jaguars. That guy can go be a backup somewhere else where he has a chance of winning. And that guy probably sucks, but, you know, at least he won't be in Jacksonville. I take it back. That's entirely unfair of me. I've never been to Jacksonville. I've never even been to Florida. I've never been to the South. That's not true. I have. But I don't like to admit that I've been to the South. So I won't. Okay. So let's get into this conversation with Dylan about his band Yashira and their record Fail to Be and everything else about them. But first, we should play a song from that record. How about we play Impasse? And how about you love it? And how about you listen to it right now? And then how about you listen to us talk? Okay, sounds like a good plan. Let's do it. Talking about another person's band, though. We're supposed to be talking about your band.
All right, I'm in. Let's do it.
Tell me about. Well, no. Let's. How about this? Your name is Dylan, right?
My name is Dylan. Yes.
And you play guitar and do the vocals in Yashira, right?
Correct. Yep.
All right. We gotta get those basics out of the way before I fuck it up somehow. So.
All good.
When did you first get interested in extreme music?
I guess my first like real band that I remember liking that was intense was probably like Linkin Park Hybrid Theory.
Yeah.
Like when I was super duper young. That's definitely what opened the door for me to you know, bigger and better things, I guess. But you know, I can't even really recall any other bands specifically that it was mostly my sister. My older sister was bringing home like mixtapes and stuff from middle school that friends of hers were making.
Yeah.
And I got like Evergreen Terrace on it and Into the Moat, The Red Chord, Converge, and all these things. And I didn't know the names of the bands or anything like that because they were just giving her these CDs and I was just listening to these CDs over and over and over again. And until MySpace came out, that was where I really, really started to dive into stuff, like just spending hours at a time researching bands and looking at other bands' top eights and finding stuff that I would like on there and stuff like that. So it's been a very, very long road, and I've been on it for a very, very long time, probably since I was probably eight years old, nine, something like that. So
what does that put you at now, like 30 maybe?
No, I'm 26.
Okay. Wow. So you were into it young. I was gonna say some of those bands you mentioned, specifically like the metalcore stuff, the Evergreen Terrace, Into the Moat, that was happening. Like I was just looking at this the other day because I was doing these dumb album comparisons where I was saying which one was better, Evergreen Terrace, Burned Alive by Time, or Poison the Well, Tear from the Red, which both came out in 2002. That would make you pretty young.
I hadn't even gotten into Evergreen. The first song I ever heard from Evergreen was their Zero cover off of Writer's Block.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if they had just come out with that. I think they did because I went to their Wolf Biker CD release show when I was really young. I must have been 12 or 13 years old or something like that. So
okay.
Yeah, they really did a lot for me. They did a lot for kids in Jacksonville in general. So
yeah, particularly that Burned Alive by Time record was a really big deal then. They weren't so big other than that, like at least up here. I'm in Pennsylvania and I don't remember much about them other than I remember them existing, right? I remember the fifth, the split with One Fifth. I remember the album between them, which was like, I don't know, it was like a Fight Club quote or something as the album title, because that's what everything was back then.
They always touched on like movies and stuff like that, like always had the movie quotes. And,
yeah,
you know, the Dear Live Journal. You know, they always were like messing around with like pop culture shit.
Yeah.
So.
But no, so that's interesting you say those things. And I like that you mentioned Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory, because I do think that's a pivotal record for a lot of people. And yeah, okay, maybe it's not the heaviest thing in the world, but it definitely got a lot of people into heavier things. And that's
another example. I was just having this conversation the other day and was just saying the same thing. Like, I don't think it's the heaviest record in the world or anything like that, but it opened the door to a lot of people to heavier things, regardless of how heavy it was. It screened, but it was still commercial. And
yeah.
It still,
yeah,
like, had harder parts, you know? And I'm not saying that they were the first ones to ever do it, but on such a large scale, because that album went platinum, like, 20 times or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's absolutely insane how big it got. And it's understandable, you know? It was half commercial, half hard, and no one was really used to that yet. So
it was. As somebody who was in high school at that time, and I remember I used to go to this website called Shoutweb. I think it was called Shoutweb, but it was and it was where you could, it was basically like nu metal news, right? And mm-hmm. I remember like the anticipation of Hybrid Theory, but that band didn't really break big until that record was already out, kind of. I don't know if I explained that correctly, but I remember like, you know, getting Hybrid Theory and it's still not being huge yet. And then very quickly they became one of the biggest bands. I don't know, not ever, that'd be a stretch, but of course for an era.
Yeah, they were, I mean, it's, maybe it's bold to say, but it's up there, you know, everybody knows what that is. And I'll be damned if I didn't hear that fucking In the End song, like at least 1,000 times when it came out on the radio, you know, so maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, it worked for him. But anyway, so there we go, talking about other bands. Let's talk about your band. Well, no, let's talk about you a little bit more. So you discovered it when you were young, and you talk, and you're from Jackson, or are you from Jacksonville?
I am, yeah.
You are. So the only things that I know about Jacksonville, I don't know anything about Jacksonville. Limp Bizkit's from Jacksonville, right?
Everybody always says that. I was literally waiting on you to say that. Yeah. Limp Bizkit is from Jacksonville.
Good. That was another band. I was a huge Limp Bizkit fan. Still am. I got to start planting that flag again. Still am. God damn it. Yeah, what else you got? Mark Brunell, the Jaguars, not much else. But maybe that's just...
Not much. We got Lynyrd Skynyrd.
There you go. That's a good one. Important one. Yeah.
Yeah. Allman Brothers, stuff like that. So.
Nice. So that's, yeah, those
not,
are all
not
worthy.
Not a huge Limp Bizkit fan, but we've, even when we first dropped Shrine 2 years ago, there were people writing articles saying the band from Jacksonville, also known as the city of Limp Bizkit. It's like, why? You know, why?
You got to do it.
We're from Jacksonville.
it's a great association. You should embrace it. You should love that. I always say that my main motivation for doing this podcast, but the main goal, the day that I will stop, is when I finally get my Fred Durst interview. Until then, it's just, you know, it's the closest I got was the guy from Cold, which, are they a Jacksonville band too?
Oh, wow.
Scooter,
yeah,
Scooter Ward. Yeah, I had him on. That was close, but that's not quite. That's not Freddie D.
Yeah, I'll go knock on Freddie D's door for you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. So you found you get in the usual way with the more popular radio friendly but heavier bands, and then you find heavier stuff, right? Like we all do. It gets incrementally, usually for most people, it gets incrementally more underground. And you're listening to the Red Chord and Converge. When did you start playing in bands?
I was always the kid in my neighborhood that was like, I guess I got my first bass when I was like 10 or so, and I started taking lessons, and I was basically just learning a bunch of like punk songs, like AFI, and I was super into like, you know, shit like AFI, Rufio, NoFX, and goofy shit like that. And so I was always the kid in my neighborhood that was like trying to get my friends to like start bands with me and jam with me. And so I didn't really start any serious band until I was probably 15 or so. But even at that point, I couldn't drive. So how serious could it really be? You know, I was like at that point doing a bunch of like Christian metalcore bands and stuff like that, and you know, just kind of goofy shit like that. It never really developed into something super duper serious until I was 17, and then I joined a melodic hardcore band called Vices from here, and that's when I started touring and stuff like that, and kind of realized that I really wanted to actually take it seriously.
Vices. I don't know if I remember that band. Did you guys get in some kind of beef with another band named Vices, or am I making something up?
No, that was Vice.
Vice, okay. Yeah. All right, yeah.
Vice. Yeah, Vice from New York, and then there was another one. Or
from like Ohio or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Man, you avoided it. You should have been in there. You should have dropped the S and gotten in there, three-way style.
Yeah. Vice FL, man. That's been awesome.
Okay.
But yeah, that was when I was 17 or so, and after that, I just joined bands that were playing around town, and until Yashira started in 2015, and getting in the room with those guys and writing songs with them, that was the first experience I'd ever had that kind of made me realize, like, wow, I'm actually creating something that, you know, I think could actually do something.
Yeah.
So we started taking it much more seriously than we had intended to, and here we are.
Well, when you started Yashira, was the direction intentional? Because it doesn't sound like the other bands that you mentioned so far, like the other stuff that you were playing.
Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
It's okay. It was. I texted Seth to start Yashira with the idea that we would do something like Cult of Luna and Isis. Like, that was kind of the idea. It was supposed to be like super airy and, you know, letting parts go on for 5 fucking minutes, you know, just chill back in. But we got Connor involved. It kind of just took a form of its own, and we really liked to just focus on letting the songs do their thing, writing whatever came out, and just, you know, not trying to put anything into a box. So
yeah,
it kind of just formed itself, really, in terms of the sound that we have now specifically.
Well, you got one of those sounds that is difficult to pin down, but not because it's totally unfamiliar, you know. It's just hard to say what it is. Like, I've seen somebody call it experimental doom, and I don't see it as that, but, you know, whatever. But that also fits too, you know. There's just a weird, I don't know, maybe there's some sludge stuff in it. Maybe there's some, it's just a little piece of this, a little piece of that. And I don't know why I'm always so obsessed with finding the genre to put something in, but I can't with you guys.
Yeah. With us, I understand why it would be difficult, because we, like I said, we just kind of like to let it go wherever it goes. And a lot of times, a lot of people say that we sound a lot like this, but also go over here to that. And that would definitely have something to do with the fact that we don't like to box it in. You know, we like to touch on all different kinds of stuff. So it's hard for us to say, too. It's hard for us to specifically say or answer when somebody says, what kind of band are you? I really never know what to say. Luke and I just say, we're just a metal band.
Yeah, that's where
it's
I would
the
go.
The easiest, most all-encompassing sound that you would get, and you can hear it and kind of decide what the rest of it is for yourself, you know?
Right, and it's true, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I heard Shrine, and I liked that record, and to be honest, I kind of forgot about it, but only because I listened to so much stuff. But I remembered it when I went to listen to this new one, and I saw I had saved Shrine on my Spotify. Like, I had made it gave it a little heart, right? So it was there. So, which for me, who listens to a shitload of, like, it's ridiculous, shitload of new music, like, weekly that I go through. If I gave it the little tag, the little thumbs up, then I know that's something that I actually liked. So while I don't remember listening to it, now that I've gone back now and revisited it, and it's a very good record.
Thank you.
You guys, was that your debut record?
I guess so. We had put out a 2-song demo prior to that, and that was it. So Shrine was technically the first, like, full release that we ever had. Those songs, the first demo were the first 2 songs we wrote, and then Shrine were the next ones. So it was definitely a period of the band where we were still kind of figuring out what we were doing, and you can definitely tell in the songs, because they are just not cohesive. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and, you know, I almost felt like I was trash talking it, and I don't mean to do that. I just mean to say that, you know, I recognize that we were young and still trying to navigate what exactly we were doing. And with this record, we made it a point to start to focus on trying, at least, to find a sound. Like, I want people to hear us and think, that sounds like Yashira, you know, rather than anything else. And I think on Shrine you had us tapping into far distant areas from the last, and it was just, I guess what I mean to say is I understand that you forgot about it, because I sometimes do too.
Yeah, well, that's all right, especially if it was your first official record. I mean, you got to find the identity somewhere.
That's how we look at it too. You know, we're not ashamed of it or anything like that. We love that it got put out, and obviously it has a new meaning to it now, being as that's some of the songs that Seth got to record with us. But it's just exactly that. It was just young.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you were headed in a good direction with it, though. Did you feel like you guys were building momentum before the unfortunate stuff happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were like really deep into like the sessions of writing failed to be like we were. Seth passed away the night that we were working on the eighth song for the record. So we were almost done with it. And then when Ryan came in to step up to the plate, we had to kind of rewrite a lot of it, because we had just started writing that like before we even released Shrine. So a lot of it still had like Shrine elements on it, and we wanted to kind of get away from doing such random shit all the time and just, you know, making the record cohesive. That was kind of the point of all of it. And we were able to kind of, obviously with everything that happened, we were able to step back and spend a lot of time on it and think about what we really wanted to do with it. We came up with something that we're all really happy with and proud of. So,
was it an easy decision to move on with the band when Seth passed, or was that something that you guys struggled with?
Well, we felt like we had to, at least in the sense that we knew that we needed to get those songs out. We didn't have the answers as to if we were gonna continue to be a full band or if we were just going to record those songs and call it. But, you know, we feel like if we were able to ask Seth right now, if he would want us to continue to push, we think that we know that his answer would be yes.
Right.
So, and with the blessing of his family and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm still in contact with them pretty much every day. We're happy to be doing it, and we're glad that we have the support of the people that really have a say in it, you know?
So. Yeah. Well, with this record, it sounds like it was a bit of a longer than usual creative process, given the circumstances. Is there a type of maybe theme or concept throughout this record, or is each song individual?
To be honest with you, I don't really touch on any of the lyrics. That's usually Luke and Connor.
Oh, okay.
I'm more of the music guy. So if I'm being 100% honest with you, that would be a question for them as to if they had something like that. But I don't think so. I don't think that they really, you know, I guess the theme would be looking inward about everything, about, you know, where the state of the world today, you know, our time with Seth and losing Seth and stuff like that. You know, I know that that's what we sing about, and I think that they would tell me if it were a concept record, and they didn't, so I don't think so.
Yeah, I think you could trust that. I think I'll take your word for it, because you're a lot closer to it than I am. This one came out on Good Fight, like your last one. Where did you get that connection from? How'd you end up with Good Fight music?
We had won this competition with Metal Sucks, probably 2016 or 17. It was the Converse Rubber Tracks contest that they put out, where you like entered in and you got to go record a song with Kurt Ballou or Will Putney.
Okay.
And we got picked by Will, and we went up there and recorded a song with him in Brooklyn, and we just hit it off with him. Like he started like kind of managing us in a way. with more of like a handshake deal type thing. And he had got us hooked up with Carl, and Carl was interested in what we were doing, because at the time we were touring with other good fight bands like Axis and Hollow Earth and stuff like that. And so it really just seemed like, you know, a good fit. And, you know, I had actually since found out that Rick from Good Fight had actually put our name in the hat before with Carl, and Carl was I guess less interested at the time, just because we were a little earlier on, and yeah. We hadn't done much, we hadn't toured much and stuff like that. And I guess as soon as we won the contest, Carl was like, oh, well, you know, somebody else sees something too. And I guess that's what it took, was a second opinion to come in, which is kind of funny. But yeah, I guess all that kind of was facilitated with Will Putney.
That's very cool, and those are very, very well-respected names in the game. Carl had, what was the old label, Ferret? That one was great. They had a lot of great records over there. Good Fight has been building, I guess now built, Good Fight's probably been around for the same amount of time Ferret was at this point, but maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, it seems like it.
It'd probably be close, yeah. I mean, I can't remember exactly when Good Fight started, but that would make sense for sure. Ferret was the label for me, man. When I was younger, holy shit, that was like, you know, Remembering Never, Zayo, Poison the Well, shit like that. I was head over heels for that shit, man. Blood Has Been Shed, underrated.
I was thinking about labels like that earlier today. I was having a conversation. I was thinking about which record labels really were important to me. And I think it's pretty some of the obvious ones for a lot of people of my age, but it was just like, well, Roadrunner is a big one. But it was Roadrunner, and then it was like Trustkill and Eulogy and Ferret. And, you know, like those.
Trustkill and Eulogy were big for me too. Eulogy was a Florida label. That was like, there's a lot of bands that I was super into at the time. I used to just go on those record labels' websites and just like look through their artists, and then go on MySpace and listen to the artists and stuff like that. Like that is what I spent my time doing in middle school. So
I get it. I was doing that in college, so that's even worse.
Yeah. Worse or better?
That's worse. So we've Failed to Be now. It's been out for a week officially.
Yep.
How's the response been so far?
We've honestly been blown away by it. We really didn't expect it, because, like you said, we kind of felt like Shrine was a little forgettable. And, you know, I think when Seth passed, that it put a lot of eyes on us, because it got a lot of coverage for whatever reason. Like, you know, we were seeing like Loudwire post about it, like AP, like all kinds of like giant publications that really didn't fucking have anything to do with us prior to that.
Right. Yeah.
They got a hold of that story, and it really spread like wildfire. And so I think that, unfortunately, that's when people started to kind of figure out who we were. So it almost kind of seems like, not necessarily that people were waiting per se, more so like when we did drop it, they recognized the name.
And yeah.
So yeah, it like I said, with no touring, like with us not doing much in the last 2 years, at this point we haven't played a show in 2 years.
Wow.
With us not doing damn near anything, for people to be paying as much attention to it as they are, it's really fucking crazy to us. So
yeah, I mean, it's a awful way to get publicity, but not by your own fault, you know. That's
right.
That's whatever, you gotta, you know, embrace it, because I like, I've seen your guys' name out there more than ever. And I don't know, I think that's now is also I've been telling everybody, so whoever listens to this probably heard me say this before, but now I think is a great time to release music too. Everybody's listening. Like, you know, you're not there's no competition with live music. And I know that sounds a little odd, but I don't know. It's just now, I feel like it's kind of a captive audience where if you put out a record, people are waiting to hear it. People are just flying through stuff right now. And it's yeah. good.
I know exactly what you mean. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I know exactly what you mean. And it's because all anybody can pay attention to right now is music getting released digitally. You know,
right.
It's like everybody's on their phone. Everybody's paying attention to Facebook. So, you know, also on the other hand of that, it's kind of like flooding the feed. Like music is like really, really clogging everything up. You know, so that's kind of a lot of people have been mentioning how goofy it is that we waited so late in the year to drop the record, but the industry kind of shuts down right now.
Yes, for sure.
And stuff like that. And we kind of saw it as a time that it's like, I mean, no one else is really going to be dropping a record around then. Like, I don't necessarily care if we end up on
the year end list.
A bunch of end of year lists. Yeah. Exactly. Like, I don't really give a fuck about, you know, any of that kind of stuff. Like, and that's not to say I don't appreciate it if we land on yours, you know, but,
yeah.
it's just like, let the feed unclog a little bit. Let's drop the record and see how it does then. Cause the original plan to drop the record was like July or August. We were planning like a 3-week tour in August, I think August, September or something like that. Back in like March when the shit like really hit the fan. So, mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny you say that because, first of all, you're right. It does, but it is kind of a contradiction thing. It is a shitty time. Supposedly, it's a shitty time to release music traditionally because people say you know nobody's looking right now. Everybody's listening to everything else that came out in the year. I always say the end of the year and the beginning of the year, records kind of get lost there. But like you said, nobody else is putting out records, so it's also a great time because you know there's limited competition. But but to also go off of what you said about making year end lists. I can only think of 2 year end lists that I looked at so far, and this album's on both of them. So you have that one was Pete from Ether Coven, and the other one is a guy who writes for me. So I've seen Fail to Be There already.
Yeah, Pete's the homie. That's the guy. He was definitely like telling me. Personally, I'm waiting to put my list out until you guys drop the record because I know it's going to be on it. We played so many fucking things with them, dude. Those are some of our best friends on the planet. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, yeah.
Sorry.
You did.
Give me a second. So one of the other things that I also saw that would be a great attention grabber for this for you guys, and I'm sure it has been, is that you have Dylan Walker from Full Hell on one of your tracks. And where did that come from? How did you get hooked up with Dylan?
We played when we first started. I think it was like our third and fourth show. They came down to Florida and they played Savannah, Georgia, and stuff. And we hopped on Savannah and Jacksonville with them. And Dylan like said some shit like he called us like Neurisis or something like that, like. I don't know, but it just like struck up a conversation that we thought was funny. And one of the last show that we actually played in Jacksonville was with them. And, you know, as soon as they pulled up and we got out of the van and he saw us, like Dylan's such a cool guy. Like he doesn't, it's funny that I'm about to say this, but he doesn't cool guy you. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
he recognized us. He came up and he talked to us and it just, like he feels like a genuine guy to us, and we just thought about it, and we were like, you know, who's somebody that would be like super super cool that we think would be into the idea? And I hit Dylan up with the idea, and he was about it immediately. So that's really all that happened. There was really no other backstory than that. But yeah, man, we're so grateful that he did that. Like I just somebody of their stature. Saying yes to somebody of our stature is, you know, you'd expect him to be like, yeah, but, you know, this is my rate or something, you know, but he didn't do anything like that, man. He just gave us the tracks and it was on its way.
That's awesome, and I was glad to see it because I wouldn't say I know Dylan anymore, but I knew Dylan back when they first got started, and he's always been a very friendly, very extremely friendly guy, and yeah, always willing to talk to people, and obviously the amount of output that band has has produced over the last decade is incredible.
Incredibly inspiring. Like they have always been on their own fucking wave too. Like they're not following any kind of fucking formula, you know. Those are the most influential bands to me. Like regardless of if we sound like Fool of Hell or not, or if we sound like Zao or not, you know, like it's just like bands that just say, you know, fuck whatever, do whatever we want all the time. It doesn't get any better than that.
Now, I remember back when they were, you know, coming up. That sounds a little stupid, but when they were, you know, building, and it was them and Code Orange Kids, right? And you could that split together, but you could just see the work ethic in both of those bands and how they never stopped. And now, I mean, they're both huge in different ways. You know, Code Orange went a whole different way. And you know, went into a different kind of a whole different realm almost. Fool of Hell went almost the opposite direction, but almost equally. You know, like it's really weird if you look at the trajectory. You know what word I'm fucking trying to say, right? Trajectory.
Trajectory.
Yeah. If you look at the trajectory of both those bands when you start that split, it's interesting, and it's interesting because they're both very successful at it.
Yeah, and even with both bands, this goes for both bands, both of their success did not, you know, harden them to, you know, looking out for the little guy either. And that goes for Code Orange, too. We played a show with Code Orange on an off date when they were on that Deftones tour when they had first come out with, like, I Am King.
Yeah.
So this was, like, the early days of Code Orange, and dude, Jamie is down as fuck, man. He, like, got a shirt from us, and I saw them on the Deftones date in St. Augustine the next day, and he was wearing it and shit. Like, he's cool as fuck. Yeah. Like, they definitely don't forget about where they came from, and that's super, super important.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. I can't say I listen to Code Orange. I don't think it's bad either, but being a Pennsylvania guy and seeing how hard they still rep Pennsylvania hardcore is... it's really pretty crazy. To just keep considering themselves a Pennsylvania hardcore band, to keep referencing, to keep playing the shows is very cool to see that loyalty to just something as simple as hardcore music.
Absolutely. I mean, to you know, and Pennsylvania should be proud of them too in general, because they just put their heads down and they work.
Oh yeah,
and you know that goes for Fool of Hell too. Like those bands specifically they put their fucking foot to the floor and go as hard as they possibly can. And Code Orange is on some other shit with like their creativity in the midst of this whole pandemic thing too. Like that You and You Alone performance or whatever that they did. I think that's what it was called. I could totally be botching it, but they have so many titles to so many things these days, like I can't even keep up. But the live production that they put into that show, I was just blown away. Like I even if you don't like that band, that's going to captivate you. And they really know how to push that like visually stimulating button. You know what I mean? And that's super inspiring for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what they've. I think that's. I mean, obviously, why they've been so successful. But speaking of, you know, doing the streams, not being able to tour, but coming up with creative ways to promote your band and all that. What are you guys gonna do, or are you going to do anything? I mean, you just dropped the record, so you don't need to. But you know, what's in the plans for Yashira now that everything's all fucked up?
It's kind of tough to say, really. Our drummer lives in Memphis, so we have to fly him in, and it's like he's a little uncomfortable with like getting on a plane with the current state of things, obviously with cases on the rise and stuff like that, and we totally don't blame him for that, you know. Yeah. I wouldn't do it either. But So it's kind of tough. Like, we've talked about, like, doing, like a live studio session type thing. Like, have him, you know, record some live versions of the songs and send them to us, and then we record them in a studio and stuff. But it's really hard to decide what to do right now, and that's what makes, like, what Code Orange is doing that much crazier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I don't want to keep going back to them, but it's really hard to think about what we're going to do. If it were right now, we would be hitting the road so incredibly hard and playing as many shows as we possibly can. But there's not a whole lot around Jacksonville either in terms of like a studio for us to go to, like, and do like an Audio Tree type deal or something like that, you know? So, but even if we did find somewhere to do that, we'd have to get Ryan here to do it. So we're kind of at a standstill as it currently stands. And, you know, we're taking it as it comes, man. If the cases start to go down a little bit, maybe we can get Ryan over here and do something similar to that. But as it currently stands, there's nothing planned.
Well, yeah, I don't blame you. I don't know what the hell people are supposed to do at this point. I think some of the live stream thing, I think people are getting a little bit tired of it, even though that's all that can be done, you know? So
yeah,
you don't blame bands for doing it, but, you know, I don't know because I haven't seen, but I don't know how well it actually works. And that's why, like you said, that's why it's impressive that Code Orange has been so successful with their different iterations and ideas. But all right, we've gone on for a little while here. We can probably wrap this up, but I want to ask you, like, what has been your favorite part about playing in Yashira up till now?
They're my fucking brothers, man. I mean, spending the time with them, spending the time with my best friends and creating with them is easily the best part of it. And I don't take any of it for granted, especially anymore. You know, getting in a room and jamming with them when we get Ryan in town, and it just, we're all on the same wavelength, and I've never had that before. So the whole experience of being in this band has been a bonding experience for people that, you know, eventually became the best friends that I've ever had, and I'm creating the best music that I've ever created, and I've fallen in love with the process of it all because of everything just seeming to just fall into place. You know, obviously with what happened and everything like that, it kind of flipped our world upside down, but, you know, Ryan came in and had this certain drive that helped mend everything. And, you know, we're at a point now where we're just happy to be doing it again. And, I'm just grateful to be here. That's all.
Well, that's a great answer. And I think that's why you're finding a lot of people in your corner at this point too. People like to see stories like this, and people like to see that you guys are still going and producing high quality too. You know, it wouldn't be.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I you know, and the thing about that is, you know, that's awesome. That's so nice of everybody. And I don't mean what I'm about to say in any bad way at all, but we would still be doing this if no one heard it. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of the thing that I love about this band, is that it's true freedom, you know? It doesn't get freer than this for any of us, and I'm just grateful for it all, man. I'm grateful for anybody that's checked out the record. I'm grateful for anybody in the future that is going to check out the record, anyone that bought a t-shirt, you know, gives us the time of fucking day in any way, shape, or form. That is what it's all about, you know.
Well, that's perfect. And hey, that's a great way to wrap this up, because I'm grateful that you took your time to have this conversation with me. And I wish you guys all the best, and I hope you can get out there and play these shows soon, tour as much as you'd like, push, come up with those things that you know that you've been inspired to do. And I think you rightfully have a lot of people in your corner, and I'm excited to see what comes from you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you finding the time to even talk to me or even want to. So the feeling is definitely mutual, and I appreciate the conversation, man.
Of course. All right, man. Talk to you later.
Take care.
Yeah, bye. So there you have it. That was my conversation with Dylan. That was Shades Erased featuring Dylan Walker of Fool of Hell. And Yashira and Fail to Be is worth your time. And I hope if you hadn't heard them before this interview that you are desperately dashing to check out the entire record at this very moment. Of course, after you finish this episode. So let's finish this episode. I want to thank you all for listening to Getting It Out podcast each and every week. Even if this is the first week you finally start listening to the podcast, I appreciate you. I especially appreciate you if you're going to Patreon, patreon.com/gettingitoutpodcast and signing up to be a patronizer, whatever it's called. I want to thank the latest few that signed up. G over in England, thank you very much. Brendan in Baltimore, I appreciate you. David in New Jersey, Jim in New York, and Wyatt in California. I think those were the last few I saw. Thank you all for your support. That shit makes me very, very happy. Okay, so other ways to support the podcast, especially if you're a cheapskate, is just by going to Instagram at @getting_it_out_podcast and following there, facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast and Twitter at @gettingitoutpod. You can follow me there for all things Getting It Out podcast, all things gettingitout.net. By the way, gettingitout.net is taking forever. It's taking so long and is so frustrating that I'm just going to start releasing articles that were written on the Facebook page. Because I don't know when this fucking website's ever actually going to happen. It's almost been a year. I think I'm a month shy of it being a year since I thought it was going to go up. So, I'm pretty frustrated with that. So I'm just going to start putting things out, 'cause I had people write a lot of cool things for me to go on this website that are seriously outdated at this point, and it's not fair to them, and it's not fair to the bands that they wrote about or for. And that it really does bum me out. It's kind of a fucking ridiculous burden that I feel. Maybe I shouldn't, but it just feels, I want this thing done. It's not getting done. So I'm just going to push it the only way that I know how, and that's by releasing these articles on the Facebook page. So if you go to www.facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast, you'll be able to see what myself and some others have written for gettingitout.net up to this point. I mentioned on here one of the guys that wrote for me, Carl, did a year-end top 25 list, and this Yashira album was on it. And I didn't get anybody to see that because there's no fucking website for them to go to. So I'm going to put it on the Facebook page, and hopefully that'll at least get some eyes on it. And there'll be lots more reviews, interviews, all sorts of stuff. So anyway, be on the lookout for that. Go to the Facebook page, find that. Sorry if I sound a little pissy there. I don't mean to. It's just, it's been a long time. Okay. So I'm going to end this one with a song from Harakiri from the Sky. I probably said that name wrong, almost definitely. And I know this band is under a bit of controversy for something they almost did, if I understand correctly. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I shouldn't be playing these guys. You can tell me if I shouldn't be, all right? So you can send me an email and be like, hey, dickhead, you shouldn't have done that. And I'll be like, all right, sorry. Maybe I'll be remorseful. Maybe I won't. But I mean, I think I've done my homework and I think I understand the situation. So I think these guys are cleared at this point. So I want to play this song that they put out for their upcoming record. This song is called I, Paul Bearer. And I think it sounds all right, at least. So check it out. Let me know what you think. Never hesitate to email dan@gettingitout.net for whatever you want to correct me on. All right. That's it for this one. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.